Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 133 of D&D Discussions, a podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhoffer. How are you doing tonight, Ben?
I am doing pretty darn good. It has been a great May the 4th weekend for me, and I am just excited to kind of get cracking and talk about some Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, we had a Star Wars excitement. Wife and I are rewatching through Andor, which is very fun. Been showing the kids the Star Wars movies for the first time. That's been very fun to see child reactions to those as well. So that's very exciting. And we're actually going to do the first here in a week or two. We're going to be doing our first D&D game with the kids.
Ooh. So that will
also be, yes, a lot of fun.
Oh, I can't wait to hear about that.
Yes, it is bound to be eventful.
Oh, yeah.
In one way or another.
Yeah. From everything that I've seen and playing with not exactly kids, but with, you know, like teens and stuff. I mean, the imagination that you get to see like at work in those types of games is always just mind-blowingly awesome. So I am really looking forward to the just absolute crazy stuff that they can kind of come up with that actually works or that doesn't work. Either way,
my son already made like a little character sheet for himself that like he wrote down a bunch of stuff, like because he wants to play an artificer, and he wrote down like what he looks like and then a bunch of like items he invented. And he's like, Dad, I probably made too many items. It's like, dude, it's okay. Like, just be as creative as you want to at first. We can always pull it back in a little bit later, but I don't want to like squelch any creativity start. So, you know, you go big and then we can talk about it or tone things down or balance it out later. But, you know, go wild. Go wild.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's going to be cool. And like I said,
It'll be so much fun. So this episode, it's kind of like just a little Q&A episode. We've got a few listener questions that have come in from Discord, which if you're not on our Discord, you should be, because people are super helpful and ask really good questions. And it's a lot of fun. So we got a few questions from Discord that we are going to talk through for a little bit. So let's just jump in, Ben. Let's just jump in. Okay. Our first question is from Multi. And he says, the game is called Dungeons & Dragons. Yes, it is. But what if it's your players that end up locked in a dungeon, jail cell, etc.? Do you have any tips for how to best move the story forward from there? In my mind, this is a logical enough consequence if the party gets caught doing murder hobo shenanigans and the like. I'm just not sure if they should all get life sentences in a maximum security prison, effectively a TKP, or if there should always be some way to bust out of the joint. It's a great question. Ben, what do you think about I guess at the end of the day, this is kind of a consequences of their actions for players.
Yeah. A lot of this, I think, has to do with why they're locked up or where they're locked up and everything. Like if this is a consequences for their actions, then I would continue the whole consequences going forward. Like if you don't want to just outright kill them or, you know, end the game, but, you know, make sure that they understand that these are things that happen. You can always give them, you know, some sort of scenario that's going to play out over a long period of time. So the world is passing them by as they are stuck in there. You know, like maybe someone is able to smuggle a spoon out and they're digging their tunnel or something, you know, like kind of give them that and make it long and tedious so that they understand like, this is the thing that you did. Or if you want to go a different way, have them break out, you know, kind of fast, or maybe they had their way bought by some corrupted politician, or, you know, just some way that they can kind of get out. But then at that point, have them be hunted, you know, have when they go to a new town, have people recognize them from wanted posters. Like, make sure that if they do, you know, if they do the crime, they have to pay the time in some way, whether it is actually, you know, keeping them in the cell, which overall probably not the best idea, but, you know, have that consequence following them around in the best way that you can. Have other adventuring parties coming after them because, you know, they're nefarious people who, you know, wiped out Glenlinton or something like that. And, you know, like, make sure that they know, like, this is a direct result of what goes on. I'm not going to stop that player agency, but what you do affects the world and moves forward with it. And based on that, I think that it can actually add a different element to the game. And heck, maybe this is them kind of, you know, steering their way either towards a redemption path or going full evil, you know, if that's the direction that they want to go in.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And as a DM, you should make sure your players know kind of ahead of time what they're getting themselves into. If there's something that could lead to them potentially getting locked up or having a confrontation with guards or something like that, or if they're in an area that, you know, laws might apply, because we talk about D&D parties a lot, adventuring, right? Because out in the wilderness or in the ruins or in a dungeon with loot and stuff like that, like, there's not a whole lot of consequences in terms of laws.
Yeah. Like, right? When they're exploring the ruins, the school of archaeology isn't coming in and finding them for, you know, breaking the priceless, you know, pottery that they just kind of stepped on as they walked in.
Yeah. But like, a really good example is the current campaign I'm running that takes place in a big city.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing stuff willy nilly, if you're killing people or you're breaking into things or you're doing stuff like that, there's going to be far different consequences than if you're doing it in some remote village or, you know, just out in the wilderness somewhere or in a dungeon somewhere, right? Or in the bad guy's castle or something like that. So it's definitely something as a DM that you'll want to make sure your players are informed of the consequences of actions that can happen based on the location the characters are, right? So if those consequences happen, and if they get into jail or go into a dungeon, there's multiple ways you can look at it. Like, there's some angles that are really fun where they're framed,
mm-hmm.
right? Maybe they're framed by the bad guy. They end up in jail. There's so many different spells and all sorts of different cool things that you could potentially use to break out. Based on where you are, you may be more powerful or less powerful than the guards or the people that are holding you captive. And then I like this scenario because then it really can help players be creative of, say, a Hexblade lock, right? You can summon your weapon. They can't take it away from you. Like, there are certain things they can't take away from you. Some spells only need somatic components, or only need verbal components, right? Those are things they can't necessarily take away from you. And so there's a lot of room to play around, one, like as a prison escape, or two, maybe it turns into more of a big RP thing where they are fighting to prove their innocence based on the information they have to try and get out in a non-combative way. And that can honestly be just as interesting, especially if you have strong role players that can use your persuasion, right? Use your deception, use your charisma, charm guards, Or maybe charm the judge, or maybe lay out a really good story and tell the truth, be very persuasive, or lay out a really good story and lie and be deceptive. So I think there's a lot of really, really interesting bits you can play around with that. But then on the other hand, you have the, oh, we actually did the thing and got thrown in jail. Then it becomes more of either a breakout, or depending on where you are, it might just be one of those things where it's like, okay, guys, you're in the raft from Marvel. You know, it's the giant prison in the middle of the ocean that holds all the worst people. It's just like, this is effectively a TPK. And then you go into something like what Ben said. If maybe years, maybe you do a jump forward 5 years or 10 years, right? And then things are completely different. Or maybe, and this is another fun way to do it, you play different characters that then are going on a mission to break your characters out.
Yeah.
Whether they be NPC allies, whether they be just a different party that is trying to break into the raft to get someone else out, and your characters might just be a side bonus of them causing havoc in that high security prison. So there's all sorts of really, really fun ways that you don't have to make a campaign end just because there were consequences.
Yeah. That being said, you can always have fun ways of getting people into dungeons or prisons, you know, albeit like, say, like a fact-finding mission. You know, there's a dangerous prisoner in there who hasn't been able to, or who hasn't, you know, given up where he hid the loot or the dangerous magic item or something. So your group is being sent in to kind of infiltrate and, you know, get into his good graces or something. It could be part of like, you know, a plea deal for murder, hoping that they did do, you know, in exchange, we're going to, you know, lessen your sentence if you work for us, like that sort of thing. Or worse comes to worse, you can just always like suicide squad them. And, you know, hey, we're going to send you, you're this adventurer that we know who's defeated a dragon. We're going to send you on a mission to work for us. We'll take time off your sentence. And that way you still have kind of that overarching, I have to go back to my dungeon, I have to go back to my prison or something like that. But it also gives them a chance to, you know, kind of get out and adventure and have fun, but make sure that you have a handler with them, not a DMPC, but like a handler of some sort. That way they could, I don't know, recapture them with a Pokeball or something and take them back to the prison in case they start acting out, or, you know, something along those lines, just to, you know, give kind of more of a flavor. And again, like, have them just work for the system and have that be the punishment. Because like overall, you don't really want to punish the players themselves. You want to punish the characters for the actions that the players made. And then also out of game, kind of talk to them and say like, hey, you know what? I'm glad that you're going through and having fun, but you're killing a whole town. That's not good. These things have consequences for your character and stuff. But turning it into, hey, you probably shouldn't do that, this is why, but we're also going to kind of have some fun with it, could be an entire different arc and storytelling version of what you originally planned. Because if anything, as we all know, Dungeons and Dragons, you don't plan too far ahead, because otherwise you're never going to get there. Because as soon as your players come in and start affecting the world, it's a collaborative story. So if they are killing everybody in, what is it, Glentonton or something like that, and then that's where like the main quest giver is, well, guess what? You're going to be changing your story as it is anyway. So you know what? Roll with the consequences of their actions and, you know, see where it goes.
Honestly, I really like the Suicide Squad idea. Magical bomb necklaces, magical bombs in their head type thing. What a really fun way to do, like, what's it called? West Marches.
Oh yeah.
Like a West Marches campaign where every new character is just part of this. You're in prison and you're getting sent out to do this mission, to take time off your sentence or something like that, but you're also expendable. And this is the stuff we don't want to send, like, the people we care about.
Yeah, we don't want to send the knights to do this. No.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that to me, when you were talking about it, I was just like, man, that would make a really cool, like, West Marches style campaign where you could have that overarching permanence of this is the prison thing, but there is quote unquote unlimited number of prisoners from week to week. Some may be the same, some might not be, right?
Yeah.
And then you get sent out to do the thing, and then you come back, and that's a session.
Think about it too. That's a really good way to kind of dabble into, like, much harder or higher level encounters too. Because if you're just like, oh, there's an ancient dragon over there, they've been, burning every single paladin we send to a crisp. Your turn.
We got to get our high security strong people to go that have done really bad stuff, but now we've got them, dead to rights type thing. We're going to send you level 17 people or whatever to go take it on.
Yeah. They have to be the ones who infiltrate the Demi-Lich cult and take him down, find his phylactery and then and destroy it or something. Like, I kind of want to do this as a campaign now. I'm not going to lie.
This sounds like the perfect, like, friendly local game store.
Yeah.
Type thing where you can just have where you have the random people signing up from week to week. Man, that does sound like a lot of fun, because you could totally. I know we're kind of getting off our thing, but I guess we kind of talked. You could totally build up your lore piece and have that be your permanence. You could have your permanent NPCs, your warden and your guards, and just the whole deal. And then as just part of character creation, your job is to come up with a why you are in there.
Yep.
Based on what level of play you're doing that week.
Yeah.
God, that sounds so much like so much fun.
And I mean, you could still, choose like your magic items and stuff, because obviously they'd be like confiscated when you're brought in. So if you're going to be effective, you have to have that stuff back. So you can still have like cool loot and everything. And if you survive one mission and are taken back to the prison, and then next time that you're able to join the West March, there's your character right there with the cool stuff you had.
Yeah. That sounds fun. There's a freebie for everybody.
Are we saying we
Let's
need
know
to,
if you do something
we
like
need
that.
To make a game shop and run it now so that we can run this game?
Yes. I'm going to quit our jobs and go open a game shop. If only.
If only.
If only. But yeah, hopefully that helps a little bit for those of you who are wondering about things like that, hopefully that's some fun ideas if you ever run some one shots or West Marches stuff. That sounds really cool. I really kind of want to do that in my world now. Just like put a prison like on an island or something.
I just came up with a prison station or planet or something for my Spelljammer campaign for my next campaign. So
perfect.
It's gonna be a thing now.
Good stuff. This is why we have a podcast. It's really just for us.
Exactly. I mean, some of my best ideas have come from just talking to you about random things. I'm like, ooh, that sounds like fun. Or I tuck it away until we know we're going to have a discussion on something that I'm waiting to put into my games later on. And so, we're hanging on to at least one topic right now that we can't talk about because I haven't implemented it in my game yet.
Yeah. Soon. Hopefully.
Yes. It should be soon.
All right. And the other question we're going to cover tonight is from Isaac. They ask, any advice for helping cautious players be more bold? Has anyone experienced this? I've expressed my joy as a DM is to collaborate or is to experience the collaborative storytelling that D&D offers. So my goal isn't to outright kill them, but I have a player who seems to believe that is my only goal. So Ben, what advice would you have for helping an overly cautious player kind of get more bold and feel better about doing things and feel like the DM is not out to get them constantly?
So I have two ideas. And first and foremost, there's other stuff that's going to pop up, as we discuss things, but first and foremost, pull them aside and talk to them. I mean, that's the easiest thing to do. Let me take it back. For some people, that's the easiest thing to do. Sometimes, discuss things like that could feel daunting, or, maybe it's like you don't want to pull the curtain back too much for some of your players. Like I can kind of get that, but I really think the best thing that you can possibly do for this is just kind of take them and say, like, hey, I know you're cautious. I know that you've spent, 45 minutes on how to open a door. You don't need to worry too much about that. Even if there was a trap or something, it's not going to outright kill you. And, just kind of talk about it, talk about balance, kind of give them an idea of like, my goal as a DM is for you to tell your story and to play the game. I don't want a flock of green dragons to drop down and spit acid on everybody just for kicks. Like this isn't how this goes. We're telling a story, not a haha, I got you. Like this isn't a Souls type game. For those who don't play video games, it basically Demon's Souls was I think one of the first ones that came out in the series. And it's an incredibly difficult game where things just come out of nowhere and attack you, or like one hit can kill you or things like that. Like that's not how D&D is. So I would really just, straight up just talk to them about that and, kind of give them your different perspective. And that ties into my second idea, which is just straight up have them DM a couple sessions. Let them kind of see how it is on the other side of the DM screen so that they know that one, I just want to kill everybody is not fun for the DM, but even more so, it's not fun for the players. Give them an idea, kind of let them read the new DMG that kind of tells you how to run a game in a very good way. And it's going to really give them an eye-opening experience to kind of see, oh, okay, so this is actually why we do things the way that we do. This is how balance works and how incredibly hard it is. And my DM sucks at it, but I still love playing anyway. That's me, by the way. I'm still bad at balance, but just that sort of experience really helps kind of clue into different things. Like I believe that I'm a better player because I DM. And I also believe I'm a better DM because I get chances to play. And being on both sides of it, you, for one thing, like learn and understand the rules and kind of how the mechanics work of the game. But even more so, you know what sucks as a player and what is not fun and enjoyable. And at the same time, you know what sucks as a DM and what's not fun and enjoyable. So being able to just kind of sit back and take a look and say, oh, the DM doesn't want to kill us. That's not fun for them. We're not 10 anymore and think that that's the object of the game. This is more of, a story that we're crafting together for a shared experience. That's the only way that it's going to move forward. Yes. Are there going to be challenges that, need to be overcome? Yes, that's part of the game. The goal isn't to kill us. The goal is to challenge us. Sometimes the dice don't go in our favor.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Those are really great ways, especially out of game, to really try and help build people's confidence back up. And like Ben said, sometimes, we always talk about it, communication is just very important. Sometimes all it takes is to talk. But there are also ways you can do the same type of thing from in-game as well. One of the ways is what I like to call training sessions, which is basically encounters that are meant to be easy to help build player confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's stuff you can pit against the players that let them kind of flex their muscles and get kind of a, you know, an easy win that aren't going to be deadly. And that the players can just kind of have a good time with. Not that the encounter has to be boring.
Yeah.
Right. You can still make encounters that aren't deadly fun to play, even just by doing things like having enemies that can just have a lot of ways to move the characters around, or, you know, trip them, or, you know, kind of the more mundane things that still make combat interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's meant to try and raise player confidence, where they go, oh, I only got hit once or twice, or I only lost like a quarter of my health, or something like that. No one went down. We were able to take them all, and, you know, nobody died or anything like that. It's really good. And I think it's a really good rule in general to throw those in every once in a while, just because not everything can or should be deadly every single time. Unless you're in a campaign that just doesn't do a ton of combat. Cause then if that is the case, then you do want to make each fight very appropriate and meaningful. But, especially if you're in like a 50-50 RP combat campaign or a campaign that leans a little more heavy on the combat side, it's very easy to throw those in every once in a while to help really build player confidence. Another thing you can do is consumables. I think we've talked about this a few times. Mm-hmm. Give characters consumables. Give them stuff that they can use to buff. Give them limited use items to help them feel cool. These can be really, really helpful because, A, you don't break your game for permanent by giving like a very rare legendary weapon or something early, but it gives your players cool tools that they can use, to be creative in different situations. And if you do it regularly, or they see, you know, you do it regularly, they will use them more. And you can kind of train them that way as well. Because sometimes having that little extra bit of stuff, the potions, limited use magic items, you know, maybe the necklace fireballs or something like that, that can help give confidence to approach things differently or a little more boldly. And then lastly, give opportunities, do the same that those same training sessions, but in RP scenarios. Let them have those social wins. Potentially, if they have trouble being too cautious or being too shy, you can have NPCs address their characters directly so that they don't have to be the ones to initiate the conversations or have to be the ones to jump in on conversations. You can, if you have the NPCs talk directly to them, that can sometimes help pull them out a little bit because they didn't have to do the work or break in, because in a lot of games, there will be a player or two that are naturally taking the lead or are the, you know, more talkative ones or the face, right, of the party. So I think it's a good idea in general for DMs just to make sure that all the players are getting sufficient talk time and such, especially if the players are interested in that type of thing. Right. But even for ones that are more cautious or more shy, like I said, have the NPCs address them directly, because that can really help them kind of break in their character or have to think through things or give them the opportunity to take the lead in a situation.
You know, in building off of that, how you're saying, you know, build confidence, give them some wins, social wins, combat wins, things like that. I'm going to expand on that even further and say, give them losses, because one of the best ways in life, much less in TTRPGs, to, you know, kind of understand how the world works and what to do is to have losses. I'm not saying, you know, just like kill a party member, or, you know, player character at random or anything, but like, if they're exploring a dungeon, you know, have one trap be insanely high of a DC to catch defuse or whatever, have it go off and show that you're not insta dead. It's fine. You know, you took a little bit of damage or you're delayed or something along those lines, just to kind of give them the idea that, hey, you know what? It's okay to fail. Same with those social encounters. If they're, you know, rolling low on a, like a charisma check of some sort, that's okay too. I mean, one of the big things that, you know, as DMs, we need to remember is that our players are going to want, you know, every single bit of information, every single advantage, every single thing that they can possibly have to feel safe and to move forward with, you know, whatever action it is that they're going to do. But one of the best ways to kind of, you know, reinforce that it's okay if you fail is letting them fail. And there's always a way out of that, you know, especially in social encounters. If you fail something, you might have closed a door on one thing and completely opened up a door on another, or, you know, a different path, a different window. Or maybe, you know, they don't have a good perception check. They don't know that the werewolf is hiding in the tree. And then, you know, what's the worst that happens with that? All of a sudden, either if they're hunting it, they don't find it that night or something. Or it jumps in and then, you know, they're surprised for a round. Again, not a big deal. It's just kind of one of those things where the small failures kind of make you feel okay for the bigger ones and the bigger ones. And even then, as the DM, you can still control the outcome on how it goes. So make sure that you're not, you know, overdoing and overtuning everything, but, you know, make it as fair as possible. And, you know, if they fail, it's still cool. That's a big part of D&D. And to me, that's one of the biggest draws. You know, if I do poorly in Monopoly, I lose the game. If I do poorly in Dungeons and Dragons, you know what? There's opportunity in that. There's always opportunity to move forward in some direction.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me, there was an episode of Adventuring Academy on Dropout, which, you know, Dropout, phenomenal.
Do it just for price hike.
Just for D20 alone. Like, it's totally worth it. But they have a series called Adventuring Academy where Brennan sits down with another person who's played before. Mm-hmm. And I just remember the one with Sam Reich, where Sam says, where they're doing like a back and forth of agree to disagree type thing. And Sam's thing was, I think ones are more interesting than 20s.
Yeah. And in those, Brennan has to disagree and debate. And he didn't want to on that one, which I think was great. Yeah. No, Dropout's great. Both of us are subscribed. Definitely recommend it. If you're subscribed before the price goes up by like $1 per month, you get the old price. Definitely join it. There's a lot of fun content.
Forever, as long as you're still subbed. Yeah. I wish all the things did it. It's an incredibly smart, awesome business model and an incredibly awesome company.
Yes.
But yeah, that's, I think that really just goes to Ben's point of failure. Sometimes failure can be more interesting than success and lead to much more interesting outcomes, and cause your players to be and need to be more creative than if they just succeeded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But thank you so much, both Multi and Isaac, for the questions. If you have questions of your own, you can join our Discord, send us an email at dndiscussions@gmail.com. We'd love to hear them and talk about them on the show. All right. So before we kind of wrap up a little bit, we did want to mention that as we talked about in the last episode, the sage advice and the errata pages are up now on D&D Beyond. And the sage advice especially is very good because it has a lot of clarifications for a lot of the very common questions or issues for D&D. So there's a whole chunk of advice on rules references, official rulings, ability checks, you know, combat, multi-classing, class features, monsters, magic items, et cetera, et cetera. So you can jump into there and they have them all nicely labeled and divvied up by section to see if there's an answer to a question that might have come up in one of your games. And there's also a full guide for the errata, the adjustments for the different source books, the adventures, and of course the older legacy titles as well. So definitely check those out just to see what the newest stuff is, because obviously those would be more up to date than a printed a printed book if you have a question about anything. So we will have that linked in the show notes on dndiscussions.com.
Yeah, and this sage advice is so good. All these questions are a lot of those like kind of fill in the blank things that aren't exactly in the rules but are like kind of assumed, or they're ones that are like, okay, here's this really crazy specific situation that I find myself in. Does this ability work this way? And I definitely recommend just kind of scrolling through and reading some of the stuff because like I've already gone through like some of the adventuring and combat like sage advice bits, and they really spell out a lot of different like one-off or weird situations that are combined with you know, different like conditions and stuff like, oh well, if I'm incapacitated, can I do this or this? In the old version I did this, and you know, completely answer all these questions. This is great. And I mean, there's a lot of different like just features and sections in this, and yeah, definitely check out that link.
Yeah, very good. Okay, well, with that, Ben, I think that brings us to the end of our episode. But of course, before we go, we usually always talk a little bit about what we've been doing in our games. So, Ben, have you gotten to play since the last time we chatted?
I have not been able to play in my game or any other special one-shots or anything like that. However, we did start campaign 3 of Plus 5 to Hits. And I do not know when that first episode will be out, but it was a very fun first start, and I am excited about my new character.
And that's, yeah, new campaign, new setting, new characters, new faces. So if you're looking to jump into a new game, that'll probably be a good spot.
Yep, and I'll post on Blue Sky once the episode's out, so that everybody knows to kind of, you know, as a good starting point. That would be good. How about you, though? I know that last time we talked, you had kind of set up some really awesome, you know, plot related things going on. So I got to ask, what's it looking like in your world right now?
Yeah, so we played just a few days ago, and this was kind of the culmination of a lot of buildup that was happening. So the party decided to infiltrate the temple where the artifact is being held, and they believed it was being corrupted or something. And also the same place where that they discovered that large summoning or a teleportation circle was being created. So one of the characters actually is basically like a changeling, and they met up with one of the bad guys essentially, and kind of got her look, her style and such, and set up a meeting with them as a different person to discuss some magical things. So now the party had a time where they knew this person would not be at the temple. So they disguised themselves as this person, and the rest of the party disguise themselves as other members of the clergy and bodyguards. And so they went to the temple during the time when they were supposed, with this alternate identity, was supposed to meet her, and were able to get access to the currently closed off to the public temple, and walked in, and were very surprised to see a very gruesome sight of several members of the temple, because they're like, I wonder if this whole place is corrupted, or if, like, everyone in this temple's bad or something. And they quickly found out that some of them are, but some of them aren't. And they found several members of this Temple of Tyr hanging by chains, tubes connected to them, down to a demon that was sitting behind this artifact, slowly corrupting it.
Wow.
So they walk in on that. That was kind of a shocker just at first. But then the main person, his name is Canon, is just like, oh, you're here early. Do you want to go test the teleportation circle now? And they're just like, sure. So they get led downstairs, and they start, the guy is getting ready to, turn this thing on. And, my wife, who plays the paladin, was just like, we gotta stop this. We gotta go. And so she just charges. Fortunately, she's tiny dwarf. Tiny legs. So we kind of rolled off initiative to see if he noticed, you know, the fake cleric pulling out the giant axe and charging. And unfortunately, the bad guy was able to essentially slit the throat of the other dude who came with them.
Oh, no.
Which caused the teleportation circle to activate. And so now you've got this huge, like, 30-foot thing. So it's basically this, like, circular room that's got this, like, 10-foot walkway all the way around it. And now this portal that opens out into the mountains somewhere and is about 30 feet off the ground and going down. So two of the characters who were standing in the circle when this happened had to make dex saves to jump to safety as this portal opened. And then this giant hook comes up and hooks the stone around the edge of the portal, and a fire giant climbs
up. Wow.
So now there's this fire giant along with Canon, the bad guy, and our party, who are trying to stop this dude from doing bad things. But now there's, the only way you can get around is to run around one direction or other of the circle, because no one can fly. And this thing is, like, now 30 feet across, opening into the abyss, or at least, you know, 30, 40 feet down onto jagged rocks below, with, you know, volcanoes in the distance and all sorts of stuff. So this incredible combat ensued. The whole party tried their best to just focus on Canon and get him down. But they knew that this group of people that they've been fighting have these rings that they can use to teleport away. And so they've seen it before, where if the person gets too threatened or thinks they're losing or whatever, they will use their ring to teleport away. So they're ready this time, and they're like, we need to get rid of that ring. So they did some damage to him. Fire giant's still looking okay. He's looking kind of hurt, though, and they're worried he's going to try and teleport away. So my wife, who's playing the paladin, asks for a cult shot. She's like, I want to cut his arm off so that he can't use the ring. And so cult shots are interesting. There's no actual, like, rules necessarily for this. So when someone wants to do that, first off, I usually don't let it happen unless the enemy is, I usually don't let it happen unless there's certain circumstances. This one I thought was worthy of allowing a called shot because it's a specific item that can do a specific thing that they're trying to stop. So, and I usually don't let it happen unless the enemy is at least half health or below, because otherwise they're probably too strong still for that, something like that to happen.
Yeah. Makes sense.
So this dude is wearing full plate, has an AC of 18. So I told her, okay, so if you want to do this, number one, it adds 5 to the AC. So your AC is now, you need to hit a 23. And then if you want to do what you're going to do, you need to do at least 20 damage. But even if you don't get that, even if you get 18 or 19 or whatever to hit, you'll still hit him. You just won't do the thing. Right. So it was very specific. You need to get at least a 23 to hit, which they're level 7. So not the easiest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
For her specifically, I think she would need like at least a 17 to roll at least a 17 to hit that 23. But then she also needed to do 20 damage, at least 20 damage. So
also at level 7, not always the easiest thing to do.
Not the easiest thing to do, especially since she had basically used a bonus action to summon her steed, which was the only way she could get fast enough.
Oh,
she had basically summoned her steed. So it was the only way it would be fast enough to get around. Now, later on, we realized that the summon steed was an action and not a bonus action, but at the end of the day, it didn't matter because her using it as a bonus action caused her to not be able to smite on that turn. So I thought
I think that evens.
I thought that was a fine trade-off. So anyways, summon the steed, enough movement to get around that 60 feet to where she needed to be, jumps off, rolls, nat 20.
Oh, nice.
Nat 20, which in my game, what I do is you get a full dice of damage and then you roll.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got a great axe. So she got 12 damage automatically. She has a +3. So that's 15 damage.
So
she needs to do at least a 5, and she rolls a 7.
Oh, nice.
So she literally rolled the only thing she could have rolled to get the 23 or higher to hit and to get the 20 damage, because she couldn't smite.
That's so great.
So she ends up chopping this guy's arm off. And then she was like, so weapon mastery, I have cleave. And the arm's a separate entity now, right? I was like, okay, I get what you're saying. And I was like, go ahead. You need a 15 to hit it. And so she rolls the cleave. She hits it. And she spins her axe around to use the blunt side, hits the arm from the cleave attack and knocks it into the portal.
Oh my gosh. That's
so great. Like chop off, spin around, golf swing, punt this cut off arm into the portal. One of the coolest things, like the whole table was just like going crazy.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
And all just ridiculously minuscule chances of all of this happening just in a row. And it's just like, well, I can't be mad about that because the dice told a story.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to let the dice tell the story. And it's incredible. It was an awesome ask. I absolutely loved it. And then they went on to, they ended up defeating Cannon and killed him. They were taking a lot of hits from the Fire Giant. And then she just ended up, it was it being MVP this session. And it was hilarious because it was her birthday day too. So it just, it was appropriate, but hilarious because I didn't actually like make any of this easy, but ended up doing, I think it was a Wrathful Smite on this Fire Giant. I rolled in front of the board for the wisdom save for the fear. Just, you know, to be fair about it. Fails the wisdom save, is afraid. The only, what was the farthest thing away from the party? Going back through the portal. So she scared the Fire Giant back into the portal. Then they spent the rest of the players spent their actions scuffing up and destroying the runes around the teleportation circle.
That's great.
And ended up closing it so they didn't have to fight and potentially die to the giant. And that's where we ended the session. And it was absolutely insane. Probably like, and it, you, it's part of it is just you kind of have to be there, right? But top five sessions I think I've ever played in or ran.
That's like pretty great.
It was
though.
Absolutely wild how everything just ended up working out and everyone had a ton of fun. And I can't wait to see what happens next as we come back in and they're just in this like really lower chamber of this temple with what's happening upstairs happening. All of them are hurt. Resources have been used, but they've killed one of these main antagonists that's been here for a while. So very excited to play again. It was a wild, wild time.
That's very cool. I'm excited for that story, but even more so, like that is an awesome set of actions to get, you know, essentially like kind of the first part of the win. And
yeah,
I mean, that's great. That's some awesome
yeah.
calls,
a DM,
awesome DMing.
Reward like, your player creativity. Reward your play. Don't give it to them. Don't just give it to them. But if they come up with cool ideas, find ways to facilitate the potential for it to happen.
Yeah.
Because then even if it doesn't happen, it was still a really cool idea. And if it does happen, oh boy, that's just the coolest feeling.
Definitely.
But it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Looking forward to playing again for sure. Oh, but with that, I think we will end our episode here. Thank you everyone so much for listening. We appreciate each and every one of you. Thank you for your questions. It's always so fun to get to discuss them and have a really good excuse to hang out with Ben for a little while.
Oh, well, thank you.
But if anyone else wants to share their stories or submit their own questions, or even just come talk some D&D with us, Ben, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached?
You bet. So here's the fun thing. If you want to ask a question in our Discord, like Isaac and Multi did. And also Kai, I do see that you added a question in there, but it came in after we made our notes. So we'll cover that in an upcoming episode. Make sure to join our Discord. You can find a link to that on dndiscussions.com. Here's the cool thing about dndiscussions.com. All of our episodes are also there. So all 132 other episodes are there. If you haven't listened, if you're new to the show, check them out. For the most part, they're pretty much timeless because look, D&D's been around for a very long time, and a lot of the concepts that we have really don't stick to specific editions. And the ones that do, hey, guess what? Everything's becoming new right now anyway. Who cares? But there's still some things you can learn from them. That being said, dndiscussions.com. There you'll also find links to our Blue Sky accounts. You can find the shows at DN Discussions. Ryan's is at TBK Zord, and I am at Ben Bonhoeffer. And then also, aside from our Discord and our website, you can always check us out, send us emails, dndiscussions@gmail.com. You know, send us your questions, your stories, whatever you want. You know, we'd like to keep the discussion open. It's, you know, kind of why we named the show this. That, and, you know, it sounded really cool. So definitely check that out. Let's see. I talked a little bit about Plus Five to Hit earlier. You can find that. It's an actual play podcast that I'm in. The previous four episodes that are currently out, I actually DM'd. It was a little interim between campaign 2 and 3. So check that out. But again, dndiscussions.com. You can find pretty much everything you need there. And with that, Ryan, it is a pleasure talking to you. I'm glad we were able to get to some of those questions this week. Listeners, everybody who supports us, thank you so much. We appreciate hearing from you, talking to you, and just knowing that you're out there. So thank you very much for that. And with that, until next time, everybody, roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.